here over the last many months to have an opportunity after an absence from the pulpit to be back and speak for the first time. And so I've had occasion to do this before, but I want to do it again, and that is to thank you, each one of you, for all that you have done for Robin and for me during this time. And also I want to thank the men who have filled in from time to time and delivered lessons. That's not particularly an easy thing to do, but certainly so if it's something that you don't do on a regular kind of basis. It requires time and effort, and these fellas, most of them anyway, with maybe the exception of Jack, they work for a living, so in addition to their normal work, they take on an additional responsibility and their willingness to provide lessons from time to time, and it's just very, very much appreciated. I know the congregation appreciates it as well. May I ask you a question? Do you think it's really important whether a church, when it comes together like this, in its worship services, uses instrumental music? I mean, is it real? In the grand scheme of things, is it really that important whether they use instrumental music or not? Well, I think there probably are a number of answers that have been given to that in people's response to that question here today. And certainly, if it's a question that is posed to a group of people, you'd get different answers. And not necessarily because you would have a group made up with differing religious views, or people coming from different religious groups. You would very easily find, I suspect, in this group, you would very easily find divergent answers to that question. Some would say, no, it's really not that big of a deal if a congregation uses instruments of music in their worship services. No big deal. I mean, really, David, get serious. Others would say, yes, it is a big deal. I would be among those, by the way. But others would say, yes, it does make a big deal. You just have a divergent response to that. I feel confident. I read a number of years ago a quotation that was taken from a history book. A man was writing about a religious group. Actually, he was writing about Churches of Christ and the history of Churches of Christ in this country. He was not a member of the Church of Christ, but he was a historian. So that's what he was writing about this, and he was observing that among Churches of Christ historically, instruments of music have not been used. And he made the observation, as a historian would in telling the story about some particular group, he made the observation, it is a peculiar mind that thinks it matters whether one uses whether a congregation uses instruments of music. It's a peculiar mind that thinks that way, was his observation. And that's exactly right. That is exactly right. It is a peculiar mind. It is a peculiar way of thinking that leads one to that conclusion. But I want to tell you something. It's a peculiar mind that leads one to the conclusion that it doesn't matter It's a peculiar way of thinking. It's a particular, it's a certain way of thinking that brings a person to that conclusion. Either way, either one. Some would come to the conclusion, I don't think it matters. That's a peculiar way of thinking. There's a particular way that a person must think in order to get to that point, to that conclusion. Well, I want to talk to you this morning, and I'm going to continue the lesson in this evening, too. But I want to talk to you about investigating instruments of music. Just, what about them? Well, some might ask, well, why don't you use them? I've already indicated what my view is about this. And some would say, and I would be very happy for someone to ask me about my beliefs and my peculiar way of thinking. And how did I arrive at this conclusion? Be very happy to talk with people about this. But some would ask, why do you think it matters? Why don't you use instruments of music in your worship at the group that you're a part of? Because this is a thought, a question that to many people it's just unimaginable. I would have never thought of that. It may very well be that we have some in our midst today who are visiting this congregation for the first time. Maybe they're visiting a Church of Christ for the first time. Totally unaware of, you know, what do they do? What do they believe? What do they practice? And may very well have, one of the things, probably, if that's the case for you, probably one of the things that stuck out in your mind after our services began was the absence of a piano or an organ or a band or some kind of musical accompaniment to the, or instrumental accompaniment to the singing that we have done. And I thought, well, that's peculiar. And you'd be right. It is. It is a peculiar way of thinking. Now, I do want to emphasize to you that the absence of such instruments is based upon a principle. It's not an accident. It's not a mistake. It's not that something, you know, terrible happened and our instruments were destroyed by water damage or something like that. I heard a story one time about a young fella. Went to a work day at the church building where he and his family attended, and went with his father, and he was one of the young boys, and so he got assigned, you know, to a certain area. And it turned out that where he was working in the auditorium was right where a man who was hired to come and do some work. He was one of these skilled guys, and you know, so they had to hire somebody to do this. And so this man was not a member of this congregation, and so he was up there on the ladder doing his work, and the young boy was down at the foot of the ladder doing what he had been assigned to do. And the man looked down at the boy and he said, "Son," said, "where's your piano?" And the boy said, "We don't have one." The man kind of looked around again. And he said, "I know where you can get one. Cheap." Now, the absence of instruments here today is not because we lack the funds. It's not because something has happened to damage them, some accident or what. It's by choice that this congregation does not employ instruments in our singing. And it is the result of a peculiar way of thinking. That peculiar way of thinking begins with an acknowledgement of authority, with the acknowledgement of the fact that there is authority in religion, and that we must submit to that authority. Authority that Jesus spoke of in Matthew the 28th chapter, where I ask you to look in the 18th verse, where Jesus says, "All authority has been given to me in heaven and on earth. Go therefore, make disciples of all the nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit, teaching them to observe all that I commanded you. And lo, I am with you always, even to the end of the age." This is, you will perhaps notice, Jesus' statement to the apostles when he is preparing to ascend back into heaven. He's giving them what we often refer to as the Great Commission. He is commissioning them. He is charging them, giving them direction to do what he wants them to do. And it is to go into all the world, to preach the gospel, teach it to everybody who will listen to it, those that will hear and believe, those that will be baptized, he says, will be saved. And then you teach them all that I commanded you, he says in verse 20. The point is that Jesus claimed here to have all authority. He claimed that in matters having to deal with the things of God, he possessed all authority. And that his apostles and those who would be his disciples as Christians, that they must acknowledge that authority. They must recognize it, and they must then submit to it. And so that's what the apostles did, and we see this borne out in the book of Acts as they go throughout much of the world preaching that gospel and teaching people what to do to become Christians. And then after they became Christians, they taught them how to be Christians. They taught them, as that 20th verse of Matthew 28 says, they taught them the things that Jesus had commanded the apostles. And what you have then is a picture of an ordering of the church in the book of Acts. Why did those people, those early Christians, do the things that they did when they came together and they worshiped? When they went about ordering their lives, when living their lives, why did they do the things that they did? It comes back to this issue of authority. It comes back to the recognition that Jesus claimed through his apostles to have all authority, and that he expected his followers to submit to his authority, to be obedient to him. He expected his followers to do as he directed them to do. So why do we do what we do here? Why do we avoid doing certain things, like using instruments of music? Why? Does it matter? We're back to that same question. Does it really matter? In the grand scheme of things, David, is it really that important? Well, it is if the Lord has spoken about it. It certainly is. Why do we do what we do? Is it because we like it? I would be honest with you. There are a lot of religious practices that go on today solely on the basis of we enjoy it. I enjoy doing that, or I enjoy doing that. And in fact, I have been part of some conversations where that's the basis upon which the use of instrumental music was justified. Because we enjoy it. We think it makes the music sound good. Or, you know, there's this person at our congregation who is a very, very accomplished pianist. And we provide them the opportunity. You know, that's a good way for them to to use their talent to serve the Lord. Well, that all sounds pretty good. But did the Lord ever have anything to say about it? And if he did, what did he say? That's really what this issue about authority comes back to, is are we or are we not going to acknowledge the authority of Jesus in matters dealing with religion? And a second point that it seems to me we have to acknowledge when we consider this matter is the fact that the New Testament, both in the Gospels, Book of Acts and throughout the epistles, in the New Testament, what we find is silence on this matter. There's no references whatsoever. No references to early Christians using instruments of music in their worship services. Now, there are references to music in the worship of the early Christians. For instance, if you turn over to 1 Corinthians chapter 14. In 1 Corinthians chapter 14, we read where the Apostle Paul is writing about the gathering of the church in the city of Corinth and what they did. Some things that he commends them for. Some things he was correcting. He would say, you shouldn't be doing these things. And when in chapter 14, we'll simply just break into the line of thought here in verse 14 of 1 Corinthians chapter 14. He says, if I pray in a tongue, my spirit prays, but my mind is unfruitful. And so he's talking about their services and the manner in which they were being conducted. And being conducted, he speaks about with the mind and as well as with the spirit. In other words, that they know what they're saying, and that they know what they're doing, that they comprehend it. And in verse 15, he says, what is the outcome then? I shall pray with the spirit, and I shall pray with the mind also. I shall sing with the spirit, and I shall sing with the mind also. Now, the point that I just wanted to bring to your mind here is, in this little brief snippet we get of how a church in Corinth was conducting its worship services, here is an acknowledgement of the fact that what they did was they sang part of what they did. It also talks about praying and other things. But he talks about the fact that they prayed. In the book of Ephesians, probably a passage that would oftentimes be referred to in this regard, Ephesians chapter 5. We see where verse 18, and part of the instruction that's given to these Christians is, do not get drunk with wine, for that is dissipation, but be filled with the Spirit. Speaking to one another in psalms and hymns and spiritual songs, singing, making melody with your heart to the Lord. Here we find him speaking again about something that Christians did, and that was, he talks about the fact that they sang. They sang and they made melody in their hearts to the Lord. Colossians 3 and verse 16 is another passage that one could look at in this regard. My point to you is this. There is instruction. There was an ordering of the churches, of congregations, of what they were to do when they came together to worship. And it included singing. There's no question about that. Nobody disputes that. Even the most ardent supporters of instrumental music would not argue the fact that the New Testament does say something to New Testament congregations about their singing. What is missing is the same kind of information about their playing, about their use of instruments in the conducting of their services. Well, some might say, but David, what you're not taking into account is that they weren't familiar with instruments. What you're not considering is that these were people who, they didn't know anything about instruments. That, my friend, is where you're wrong. They knew a lot about instruments of music. Their world was as filled with instruments of music as yours is. They were as familiar with such things as you were. The Greco-Roman world employed instruments of various kinds, woodwinds and percussion, many different types of instruments. They employed it, instruments particularly, they employed instruments in the worship that they did in their Greco-Roman religions. I mean, their temples were filled with instruments. One of the interesting things to read, and we'll do this probably some more as we go along, is to read what people of 2nd and 3rd centuries who were Christians, what they wrote. And part of what we have is a record of people who saw in their churches members who began to say, well, let's use these instruments. I mean, we're accustomed to them, and people all around us use them, and you know, why can't we use them then? And so they began to see some in churches saying, well, let's incorporate them as well. One man wrote, who was opposed to this, a man by the name of Clement, wrote, "Leave the pipe to the shepherd, the flute to the men who are in fear of gods and intent on their idol worshiping. Such musical instruments must be excluded from our wineless feast, for they are more suited for beasts and for the class of men that is least capable of reason than for men." Now, I mean, I don't read that to offend you if you might disagree with me on these things. That's not my intent at all. But you must say that the man was clear on what his beliefs were, wasn't he? What we see is just a record of a person who was a Christian from back in these early years of Christianity, who demonstrates the fact that among those people, they rejected the use of instruments of music. By the way, this is free now. You've heard the term a cappella, I'm sure, and are probably familiar with the fact that it means music without the accompaniment of instruments, vocal music only. Called a cappella. You know what that means? A cappella? Other than the fact that I just told you. It literally, it's Latin, it literally means of the chapel. Of the chapel. Can you see it or hear it? A cappella. Of the chapel. Isn't it interesting that the phrase, this word that was used back in those days, those early centuries that we're talking about, the word that was used, the word that was devised to describe music that was associated with church. Isn't it interesting that it is a word that came to be used to describe music that was vocal only? Why do you suppose that was? Well, you can do a study of that word, and what you'll find is people who have no axe to grind in any of this will acknowledge the fact that, well, it grows out of the fact that in the early days of its history, the church and the music that the church employed in its worship was a cappella. It was without the accompaniment of music. It is significant that when you open the pages of the Bible that you find this argument made about authority and the basis for our beliefs and our practices being based upon the authority of Jesus. It is significant that when you open up the pages of the New Testament, then there's complete silence about the use of instrumental music. There is not silence in the historical record among people of the Greco-Roman world. It's not silence about the use of instrument within that world. They used it widely. And in addition to that, among Jews and the worship of Jews, instruments of music were employed. I won't take the time to read them. 1 Chronicles chapter 16, verse 4 and following. You'll find there the record of David as he speaks about the construction of the temple. Now, he's done a lot of the preparatory work for building the temple. His son Solomon is going to be the one who builds the temple. But David writes about the preparations made and how he ordered the services to be done in the temple. There were some changes that took place between the worship of and the services in the tabernacle and when Solomon constructed the temple, this permanent building where they would worship. And once they moved into those permanent kinds of, or more permanent kinds of quarters, it altered their services to some degree. And David gives this list of the preparations that he made, among them being the designation of certain priests who would be in charge of the musical instruments used in the worship there in the temple. And he lists the instruments and who was responsible for what. In chapter 28 of 1 Chronicles, we come to the end of a rather lengthy discussion by David about all of these preparations. And he says in chapter 28 and in verse 19, he tells us where all of this came from. And it's interesting that he doesn't say, well, you know, I just kind of enjoyed music. Everybody knows David enjoyed music. He was the sweet singer of Israel, renowned for his ability and song. But David doesn't say, you know, I just kind of like music and I like the way all of this sounded. He says in 1 Chronicles chapter 28 and in verse 19, all this, said David, the Lord made me understand in writing by His hand upon me all the details of this pattern. Where did he come from, David? It came from the Lord. That's what he says. The Lord caused me, he made me to understand in writing by his hand upon me all the details of this pattern. Now you get the idea of something being ordered once again. A pattern, something set out. And David is simply saying that this was done at the Lord's hand. And I've already mentioned to you this third and final point, that among ancient Christians, there is testimony to the fact that they did not employ instruments of music in their worship. We read that which Clement wrote a moment ago. Let me just read you one other real quick one. A man by the name of Eusebius, who wrote, of old, at the time those of the circumcision, that would be the Jews, at the time of the circumcision were worshiping with symbols and types, it was not inappropriate to send up hymns to God with the psalterion and the cithara. Those are two types of instruments. And to do this on Sabbath days. Now what he's saying is, during the Mosaic period, he says it was not inappropriate to in worship to God to use instruments of music and to worship on the Sabbath day. So there's nothing wrong with that. Now he continues on. We render our hymn, speaking about Christians now, he says, we render our hymn with a living psalterion and a living cithara, with spiritual songs. The unison voices of Christians would be more acceptable to God than any musical instrument. Accordingly, in all the churches of God, united in soul and attitude, with one mind and in agreement of faith and piety, we send up a unison melody in the words of the Psalms. Folks, I'm under no delusions that makes me right. I do not read the words of that man or the other man that we read. I don't read them as an indication somehow that, well, there's reason for what I believe. Well, it is reason for what I believe. It's not a basis for what I believe. Those are just words of men, fallible men who lived a long time ago. The point is, they lived during the time that we're talking about. And here's what they wrote. And it's a view, it's a statement about their practices that oftentimes is just simply not known by people. And it leads, I'm persuaded, to some incorrect conclusions people draw. But that's the only value that really has. Whether a thing is right or wrong really is determined by the one who said, I have all authority in heaven and on earth. Whether we should do something or not do something is determined based upon whether or not it is what the one who has all authority has said do or don't do. And it doesn't matter whether people look at the practicing of what is taught as being peculiar or not. Doesn't matter if people say, you know, that's a peculiar mind that draws that conclusion. I'm okay with that. Yeah, it is. It is a peculiar mind. It's a different way of thinking. Question is it the right way of thinking? Is it the way God wants us to think? Now, tonight I'm going to talk to you a little bit more about this. I'm going to talk to you some more in regards to just some of the things that folks would say in support of instruments of music. Why use them? And I hope that it will be of some help to you. But my point I want to close with this morning is this. I began by asking you about instruments. Is it really that big of a deal? Well, I do believe it is a big deal. But I want to tell you what's a bigger deal. It's who has all authority. How are you living your life in regard to the authority that Jesus claims? In heaven and on earth, he said. There's nowhere else, is there? He said, I have it all. And what's a really big deal is whether or not you're living your life acknowledging the fact that he has that authority and that you ought to submit to it. Are you doing that in your life? If you're not a Christian, if you haven't determined that you're going to follow Jesus Christ in the course of your life, then obviously you're not submitting to his authority. And I would urge you to correct that and to live your life submitting to Christ in everything that he says, whatever it may require of you. And if you're subject to his invitation to live a life like that, then we encourage you to come while we stand and sing together.